Welcome to The Reserve, a news and thoughts podcast from the Centralverse. I'm your host, Caleb Nygaard, and today is episode number 13. We have one of the most sought after Fed watchers on the planet here with us today, Roberto Perli, from founding partner and global head of policy from Cornerstone Macro. Roberto, welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here. I appreciate the invitation.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been an exciting week. Stephen Kelly is also joining us today. Welcome back, Stephen.
Thanks, Caleb.
So this week was a big week in the Centralverse, in this world of central banking. There was a lot of scoops, a lot of announcements, a lot of things that we expected to happen, and a few things that we didn't expect to happen. And so we're going to dive into a bunch of those different angles. But I wanted to start off today about the buildup and the communication from the Fed going into this week's FOMC meeting. It was very different than the 2013 experience. I think the Fed learned some lessons there. They made some commitments about not surprising in the future. So Roberto, let's just start there. Can you tell us about the communication leading up to this meeting and maybe how it compares to the last time the Fed tapered?
Well, clearly it compares very favorably, right? Yeah. Because the outcome has been like day and night. It's completely different, much, much better this time. Look, everybody learns a lesson. And I think Fed looked at how things were done back in 2013 and concluded correctly that they could have been improved. And they sure did. But, it's not just the Fed, right? So other central banks, for example, the European Central Bank tapered in 2017, I believe, their own quantitative easing program. And their communication was, again, very different from what the Fed did in 2013. And things went very smoothly. So we can say even that all central banks learned a lesson from the taper tantrum. And the Fed essentially followed the playbook that the ECB put in place a few years ago. So clear communication that there will be a taper. So the announcement was not a surprise to anybody. The tapering was mentioned at every possible instance. And so the market got it. The New York Fed published surveys of expectations of primary dealers and market participants in terms of what the expectations were for tapering. And essentially, I think the Fed tried to steer the expectations in the right direction and at the same time accommodate them when the time to make the decision comes. So I think it was an exercise in textbook perfect communication. Went very well.
So Caleb, if I can jump in, just quick question. Since you sort of invoked other central banks, one thing that's also different from 2013, aside from the communication, and I'm curious what you guys are seeing, Roberto, is that we're kind of more in a global tightening cycle than we were in 2013. And that was part of the stress, right, that we saw with the taper tantrum, is that the Fed was really, really kind of a first mover. I mean, I think I got an email this week from centralbanking.com, the newsletter, where all six headlines were about a central bank raising rates. So tell us what you're seeing there. How does that make this time different? What does that mean for the macro environment and for the Fed and its ability to continue in this direction?
Yeah, but look, I think what central banks do is, they respond to economic conditions, to the change in economic outlook. Economic outlook, I think, is changing in a positive direction when it comes to growth, employment in most countries. And it's changing in a, I would say, welcome direction up to a point when it comes to inflation, right? So inflation has been very low everywhere for many years and now is too high with respect to where central banks would like it to be. Most central banks think it's transitory, I think correctly, but some central banks are more sensitive to changes in inflation than others. And so some central banks in particular have single inflation mandates versus others like the Fed have a dual mandate. Some central banks changed their policy framework, like the Fed did and the ECB did as well. Others, Bank of England, Bank of Canada, Reserve Bank of Australia, didn't. So bottom line, it makes sense that all central banks are moving in the direction of at least slowing down the degree of policy accommodation that they provide. And some central banks are even thinking about removing some of the accommodation, so tightening policy. But I think everybody's going to move at their own place, at their own pace. There seems to be some thinking in the market that central banks tend to coordinate their moves. And so that's very rare, right? So coordination happens when big shocks, big bad shocks hit the global economy, and then there is a clear interest from everybody to move quickly and move together, so that to send a powerful signal as possible to the market that central banks are ready to help. But when things improve, they tend to improve at different paces in different countries. And different central banks, again, have different priorities. And so coordination just doesn't happen. So it seems to me that recently the market has been thinking, well, whatever the Bank of Canada does, every other central bank will do. So the Bank of Canada came out with a fairly hawkish attitude last week, and the US rates and expectations for Fed policy moved up. Yesterday was the opposite, right? The Bank of England surprised some by not raising rates, and US rate and expectations for Fed rate hikes dropped. I think it's reasonable for markets to trade based on other central banks. I would just caution that I think the degree of interdependence of what central banks will do, I think, is probably overstated. But in particular, again, the Fed has probably the most, let's say, dovish, for lack of a better word, framework than anybody else. So overshooting inflation and focus on maximum employment. So I think no matter what other central banks will do, the Fed will try really hard not to raise rates prematurely.
Yeah. And going forward, and this is kind of the other half of the buildup in the communication, and ties in how all of these other central banks are moving, and policies are policy decisions are changing. The Chair Powell made a big commitment, obviously, to not only adjust the pace of the taper based on as the data and the economy went along over the next 8 or so months that they currently have projected that it'll take to get down to no new purchases. He said that, but he also made a commitment to not surprising the markets. Is that, I guess it's a simple question, but is that possible now, and is that the simple expectation, to your kind of earlier point, that the lesson has been learned and central banks have gotten really quite good at communicating these kinds of moves ahead of time and kind of building it into the expectation such that we are when rates are when we're coming up out of a recession, we can expect not to be surprised? Is that possible, or is that too much? Is that taking it too far?
Well, look, communication has clearly evolved, it's clearly improved a lot over time. It's true for the Fed, it's true for anybody else, any other central bank. As we said earlier, the communication about QE or tapering went as well as it could have possibly gone. So it was very good. The other part of communication that the Fed is trying to put in place right now, has to do with rate hikes, and that communication, I would argue, is not going perhaps as well as the Fed would hope, in the sense that, not going as well as the leadership would hope. Because we always have to distinguish about the many different opinions inside the FOMC, but But look, you know, the market is pricing in 2 full hikes next year and 4 additional hikes in 2023. So that's well ahead of even the median dots, and certainly well ahead of where Powell would prefer to be. So why is that? Well, I think it's a mix of what we were discussing earlier. So, you know, other central banks moving, and so the market thinking, well, the Fed will have to follow. I think that's not a solid line of thinking. It could very well be that the market thinks that the Fed is not committed to the new framework, as, for example, Powell is, so the Fed as a whole, right? Because, you know, unfortunately, we hear many different views inside the FOMC of what the new framework means. And I think that's a inevitable consequence of the fact that the framework itself is vague and was left vague in order to have it approved. But anyway, that's a separate conversation. But for now, we are hearing different views as to what the framework means. And so the market has to internalize the possibility, at least, that eventually the FOMC will move, the more hawkish interpretations of the new framework will prevail. The market, I think, is also internalizing uncertainty about who the next chair will be, right? Because if Powell will be reconfirmed, we can more or less confidently assume that Powell will be able to steer the committee in a direction that that he favors. He has proven to be able to do that in the past. He is not perceived as being politicized. I mean, certainly a Republican, stood up to Trump, so he earned his stripes, if you want, in the field here.
Yeah.
Anyone else, well, there will be a question mark externally, but most likely internally as well. And so everyone else will have a much tougher time steering the committee. And so given that the committee is leaning more hawkish these days, I think the market is saying, well, yes, you, Chair Powell, can tell us anything you want, but we have to factor in a probability that you will not be there and that the more hawkish line will prevail. So I don't know that there are easy solutions to this communication problems other than reconfirming Powell and have him, you know, overwhelm the voices of the hawks. But I think, you know, the market almost has to price in a higher probability of rate hikes than the leadership favors. I don't think there are many solutions to that.
So, Roberto, I wanted to go back to sort of your comments about commitment to the new framework and disagreement amongst the FOMC. And I kind of want to get your perspective, both as a former staffer and just kind of what you're seeing now as far as just kind of an evaluation of how the Fed's doing. One thing that seems troubling to me is that the Fed does not have a really cohesive explanation for why the tapering is not held to the same bar as rate hikes, right? So the new framework is all about being patient, waiting till there's actual, you know, tight employment and inflation into the medium term. So why is tapering being held to this sort of lower standard of substantial further progress, right? I mean, this seems like a challenge. Powell's in the press conference saying, don't worry, we're not going to raise rates for a long time. We have this new framework. But then this tapering is sort of subject to a lower bar. And I think there, you know, there are reasons out there in the universe for why this might be. And I fear that it differs amongst the FOMC. You know, we've heard some talk about just inflation, some worry about asset markets, and that's why they want to taper. But it seems to me the FOMC does not have a clear reason for why the tapering is happening now, and why it's not, you know, how it kind of fits into this framework of being patient. I was wondering if you had any thoughts on kind of how the Fed is doing on that, what's maybe going on at the FOMC and how they're handling these kind of disagreements.
Yeah, well, look, you know, my former boss at the Fed was Vincent Reinhardt. Once in an FOMC meeting, famously said to the FOMC participants, you guys cannot agree to the color of an orange. And that's absolutely true, right? So unfortunately, you know, that's the way it works, right? There are 18 people right now, and there are probably minimum 36 different views as to what the framework means. And, you know, that's because some people are internally conflicted. So we cannot, there's nothing we can do about that. We're going to continue to hear different opinions, different voices. And I think what I always tell people in the market is, well, we're going to hear about those voices, but there are voices that matter more than the others. And those voices are the voice of the leadership, defined as the chair, vice chair of the FOMC, so New York Fed president, John Williams, and the vice chair of the board. So those voices are probably more influential than others, if nothing else, because they are the three people that set the agenda. And so that's the real power of the leadership. So let's focus on those and not so much on the rest. Let's listen, by all means, what everybody else has to say. But let's put more emphasis, more focus on the leadership. Also because, you know, many times when we hear an FOMC member making some statements, you know, many times, you know, people think, well, these guys are talking to us, are talking to the markets, are talking to the general public. In reality, they're really talking to themselves, right? they cannot congregate and on any given day, because that would be an FOMC meeting, and that the law requires minutes and staff and everything else. So the best way they have to communicate with each other is to give speeches, right? And so what these guys are saying many times is not meant to be predictive of what's going to happen. It's just meant to be a discussion with other FOMC members. So if we view it in that light, I think we should give it a little bit less importance that sometimes the market does. In terms of tapering, you know, how we should interpret it, why is it held to a lower standard than rate hikes? Well, I think it should be, right? Because the way I see it, at least, and again, you know, I add my opinion to the 36 already out there, but the way I see it, you know, tapering is not a policy tightening, it's just a reduction of policy easing. So you need, ideally, you want to reduce policy easing before you tighten. And so tapering should come first. As a result, the bar for taper should be lower, right, than the bar for raising rates. So I think I think the Fed has the order correct here.
Yeah, and so given this, and Powell in the past talked about these different tests and everything, we've talked about kind of everything we expected and that was confirmed in this meeting, both in either the statement or the press conference. What was there anything that surprised you or that was either stronger or weaker or that was deferred or that was a question that was answered that you weren't expecting?
Not really.
Yeah.
this last meeting was almost perfectly as expected. I mean, I think the only things that you can maybe point out that were a little bit different were, you know, the fact that the statement now doesn't say that inflation is likely to be transitory; it says it's expected to be transitory. So maybe you can hear a little bit less confidence in that statement, but it's very marginal, I would say. I mean, in particular, as long as the Fed expects inflation to be transitory, I think it would be very reluctant to raise rates, at least as long as the labor market is not judged to be at maximum employment. And the other thing, I think it was somewhat interesting, you know, Paolo during the press conference said that, well, yeah, I mean, if the labor market continued to make good progress, I could see the labor market being at maximum employment before the end of next year, which is new, but because it would imply a higher likelihood of rate hikes in 2022, right? Because inflation is already above, more than moderately above 2% for some time. So the only condition that's left to be met in order to raise rates is the labor market at maximum employment. So if Powell thinks there is a chance that also is possible that the labor market will be at maximum employment before the end of next year, well, then there is a probability that you know, rate hikes will go up before the end of next year. I would just say that you know, Powell is usually careful in the words he chooses, and so possible doesn't mean probable. So I think he has still his doubts, but at least that was somewhat opening the door to rate hikes in 2022.
Sure. And so a lot of the uncertainty you expect has to do with the upcoming nomination, whether it's a renomination of Powell and the people that are the other positions that are open right now. Maybe I'd like to hear a little bit more of your thoughts on how that impacts the new framework, and if Lael Brainard is the kind of leading contender, kind of number two, is the reasoning behind that such that she might be not as effective at getting at convincing the committee to hold out at signs of inflation, or maybe articulate that a little bit more, how this uncertainty about who's going to be the Fed chair next year plays into this uncertainty around when interest rates will happen, and one step above that, how it plays into the success or the endurance of the framework.
Yeah, well, so first of all, the framework you know, it's sort of the constitution of the Fed, right? Yeah. And so it's meant to be independent of personnel. So I have little doubt that the framework will remain regardless of who will be the chair, who will be the members of the board of governors, the FOMC. It doesn't really matter. The framework will be revised, if appropriate, 5 years from now. Sorry, 4 years from now. Now, as the framework itself provides, right? So. Framework, I think, is going to remain. Of course, different people bring different interpretations of the framework, as we just discussed, and so there is that little bit of uncertainty. But the framework itself, I don't think, will go away. Also, because I think it's fair to say, whether it's going to be Powell or Lael Brainard or Janet Yellen or whoever, Roger Ferguson, anybody, right, that this administration can nominate as Fed chair, his or her policy preferences will be virtually the same or very similar in any case to Jay Powell's, right? So I don't think that's the issue. I think the issue is a matter of perception, right? So for better or for worse, the market, I think, and also probably internally, Powell is perceived as, you know, as we said earlier, independent, not politicized. Other candidates may have a little bit of a higher bar to persuade their colleagues and the markets that they're not politicized by virtue of statements that either they made or others made on their behalf, right? For example, I have zero doubt that Lael Brainard, for example, will not be a politicized person, a politicized Fed chair if she gets the job. She will not be politicized, she will not act politically. However, the fact that she has championed, you know, climate change issue, the fact that she has been supported by certain political parties with the idea of steering the Fed in a certain political direction, I think would complicate her job as Fed chair, both externally and internally. So I think that's the risk. It's not a, not that the next Fed chair will be a political hack. It will not be, no matter who, right? But it's the perception that matters. And so this person, potential new person, will have to spend some time persuading markets and colleagues that the decision that he or she makes are based on sound economic ideas and not political ideas. So I think that's a little bit of the risk.
So kind of that you had mentioned, Powell has already earned his stripes, and a new person, no matter how maybe credentialed or past experience maybe, and maybe their actions would be exactly the same, but just being a first time Fed chair, you have to go through a period of kind of approving time.
Yes, and that's always true for everybody, but I think it's going to be even more true this time because of the increased politicization that we have seen, the increased attempts that we have seen from political forces to politicize the Fed, both in the previous administration and some members of the Democratic Party this time around.
Yeah. Now, there are kind of two views out there right now about this nomination process and the decisions of the administration so far to hold off. There's one view that says the Biden administration has really dropped the ball here, that they're forgetting about the Fed, and that by waiting this long, you know, they left the vacant seat that they inherited. They've left it now, I guess, 10 full months vacant, and the vice chair for supervision has now been a couple of weeks, and that it's been vacant, and we haven't had anything there. So there's one view, and Peter Conte Brown has articulated this view, I think, particularly succinctly. There's another view, and it's actually the view I'm more sympathetic to, I think, which is that the value to the Fed and to the administration of nominating a package of candidates that fill more than one position at the Fed may be worth more than the sum of individual nominations spread out by a few months. But I'd love to get your take on that, on the approach of filling these vacancies.
Yeah, well, I don't think that we are, I don't think the administration forgot the Fed. Right? I mean, it's just, we're not super late. We may be a little bit late, but not super late. And especially, look, if Powell will be the nominee, I'll go out on a limb here and say that his confirmation process should be fairly easy.
Yeah.
Supported by Democrats, by many or most Democrats, and many Republicans as well. So I think it doesn't matter, even if the administration nominates Powell and he waits a few more weeks, I don't think that compromises anything. So I think the administration probably has been a little bit careful because, as we know, the Democratic Party is divided as to who should be nominated.
Yeah.
So I think the administration wanted to do a thorough job of weighing the pros and cons of different candidates. Also, probably the trading, I don't want to call it scandal, but issues that emerged recently was unfortunate, and probably gave the administration some pause as well. Say, hey, let's find out here exactly what happens and how the situation is being handled. So I think the situation was handled at light speed by central banking standards, and I would say very well by Powell. So maybe that impediment is being removed. But given everything that that we know, I'm not super surprised that we don't have a nomination yet. But things seem to be moving, right? So Powell was seen at the White House yesterday. He's been asked to meet him with senators before Thanksgiving, so maybe those are signs that things are moving one way or the other.
Yeah.
In terms of making a package of nominations, I think that's the way the White House will go, and I think that's probably a good strategy. I think it will be politically, it will be probably easier to go to Elizabeth Warren and say, hey, you know, I nominate Jay Powell as chair and you don't like it, I know, but hey, here is a vice chair for supervision that you like, and a vice chair for the board that you like, and in another open position that you like.
Yeah. Right?
So there is that angle. I think it probably nominating a group of people as opposed to one today and one next month and so on, I think can send a message of coherence. Right. So here is our view of what policy should be, and here are the people that we think could implement it, of course, independently, without interference. But I think it's a message of coherence is preferable than a couple of random nominations here and there.
Yeah, I agree. That's a great perspective. So taking a step, I guess, outside of the Fed, and once again back to kind of just the global situation. We were talking shortly before the podcast was before we hit record about a few surprises yesterday in markets, and I wanted to give you a chance to talk about that.
So yesterday again is the move in rates was in any expectations for Fed policy was pretty striking. Right? So if you look at just the expectations for the federal funds rate, 2 years ahead it moved down 8 or 9 basis points yesterday. For a 1 day move, it's really big, right? And yeah. I would have been perfectly fine. I think the move was in the right direction. I think the market was ahead of what's realistic. I think it still is ahead of what's realistic. But so the move was in the right direction. I personally would have expected the move to come after the press conference, after Powell, insisted that inflation is still transitory. We're going to be patient. Doesn't make any sense to raise rates when inflation is driven by supply disruptions, right? So that would have made a lot of sense to me. Instead, it didn't happen. The move happened after the Bank of England said that we're not going to raise rates. And the markets operate under different theories, right? But I wouldn't think, I really would not think that what the Bank of England or the Bank of anything does has much to do what the Fed will do going forward, simply because the framework is very different, as we discussed earlier. Right. So to me, that was the surprise. And maybe, you can rationalize it and say, well, maybe it was a wake-up call, right? So maybe Powell's words at the press conference take on a different meaning for investors after the Bank of England's decision. Because look, if not even the Bank of England, which is a single mandate central bank, driven by an old inflation-focused framework, not even the Bank of England is going to raise rates, well, then for sure, not even the Fed will not raise rates or raise rates even less, right? Because the Fed is driven by this new, more dovish framework. So maybe there was some of that, but certainly was a very interesting and big move.
Yeah. In the market.
So surprising.
Yeah. And so going forward, then we have, Fed watchers are on this kind of 6-ish week cycle. And if now what happens maybe between the meetings is as important as it ever has been, given the commitment and what they've done recently in just providing that communication. Do you have any other advice? I thought that your advice at the kind of a few minutes ago about reading the speeches as communication between FOMC members and them trying to convince each other of their point of view was really awesome. Do you have any other kind of piece of advice or things that we should be paying attention to or not paying attention to over the next 6 weeks as the new cycle kind of begins and we wait to see what happens? Next cycle or next meeting will have the projections and the dots and such.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm always reluctant, you know, to dispense advice here, but
sure.
That word is too much. Sure. But you know, look, I think looking ahead, I would simply focus on, you know, the two obvious things, right? So the labor market and inflation, the two sides of the Fed's mandate. So we saw today another good, solid employment report. The only thing that still, you know, is not really going well is participation. So overall, participation remains flat and has been flat, with very little up and down for more than a year now, a year and a quarter. So that's disappointing, right? Because, you know, there are a lot of people that dropped off the labor force as a result of COVID, and that the Fed would love to bring back, to see coming back. If they don't, you know, maybe maximum employment is a different concept than what the Fed has in mind. So in other words, we might be closer to maximum employment than the Fed thinks if these people that dropped off the labor force are reluctant to come back. So that's one thing to say. The other thing to say, though, is that if you look at, there is some good recent research from Fed staffers on what participation did following previous recessions. And the message is pretty clear that it takes a long time for participation to recover. And so in that sense, maybe this recession is no different. It is different in virtually every other respect from previous recessions, but maybe participation will take a long time to recover this time around as well. So that poses a problem, right, for the Fed to say, hey, how patient do we want to be? And what's the threshold of inflation that we're willing to tolerate while we're being patient? Now, on the inflation side, I mean, I think, first of all, Powell's attitude is, I mean, I agree completely with it, right? So it doesn't make a lot of policy sense to say, well, let's raise rates because there are supply chain disruptions. Well, you cannot do anything about supply chain disruptions with rate hikes. And on top of that, if you really think inflation is driven by supply chain disruptions, well, you also probably think that at some point those disruptions will dissipate. And you also know that monetary policy works with lags, right? So in other words, you raise rates today, but it's going to take a few quarters before those rate hikes show their effects. And so the risk, the serious risk here, is that you know, Fed might raise rates at the absolute wrong worst time. Yeah. Right? So raise rates when inflation is already peaking and then coming down. By the time rate hikes take effect, inflation is already on the way down. They would push it even lower and would compromise the labor market. So I think that's the sort of policy mistake that Powell is really focused on avoiding. Whereas I would say a lot of other people, including some in the markets, are focused on the opposite mistake, like the Fed being behind the curve, inflation being too high, that kind of thing. But I think, you know, I view policy as an exercise in risk management, right? So you never, Fed, nobody is ever going to get policy absolutely right, because we operate in a world of imperfect information. So you have to make a decision, okay? So I know I'm going to make an error. Which side am I better off making this error? Am I better off erring on the side of dovishness or on the side of hawkishness? And I think in this situation, the calculus that the Fed is making, and I agree completely with, is that it's better to err on the side of dovishness. Because look, if we're wrong and inflation is much more persistent, well, we know how to bring it back. But what we really don't want to do is to push it down too much when it's already going down on its own, because we have no idea how to bring it back up, right? So I think, yeah, it's an exercise in risk management. Let's watch what the Fed will do, what inflation will do in the months ahead. But I think Powell, assuming he will still be chair,
yep,
we will try really hard not to raise rates prematurely.
That's awesome. Well, I think that's perfect place to to wrap it up, we will have to get you to come back on to have this conversation again in 6 or 8 months when the see what happened with the tapering, and then we'll really, I'm sure the real heat will be on about what interest rates are doing. We'll have new Fed leadership. It could be a different institution with you add in the reserve banks getting some swaps out.
I'll be always happy to come back. Of course, you know, it's very risky to come back when there are recordings of what I said the previous time. So
that's right. there's transparency in the Fed world, and we're transparency in the Fed watching world. Here we are.
Yeah, absolutely, I support that no matter what. But thank you, Caleb, and thank you, Stephen. Much appreciated.
Absolutely. So thank you to both of the guests today. Roberto is on Twitter at @r_Perley, and Stephen is at StephenKelly49. Thanks so much. And until next time, thanks for listening.